Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us tonight, and we're going to talk about the Iraqi Christian situation with the Chaldean Christians that are still in refugee camps in Kurdish territory. And of course, you'll remember, in fact, it will be 2 years this August that ISIS invaded northern Iraq. It sacked the city of Mosul and the towns and villages throughout the Sinjar Mountain area. And then, of course, thousands upon tens of thousands of refugees had to flee for their lives. And, of course, the United Nations and the Obama administration finally signed off on that genocide of Christians is taking place in the Middle East. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. And with us on the phone is Joseph Kassab of the Iraqi Christian Advocacy Organization. He's out of Greater Detroit. And Joe has really been on the front lines of this issue really from the beginning. He was an advisor to the members of the Bush administration. Unfortunately, they didn't take his advice during those days when the United States entered the nation of Iraq and deposed Saddam Hussein. And there were some mistakes and missteps made. Of course, we think during the Obama administration, by not leaving a contingency force, allowed free access for the terrorist army of ISIS to invade Iraq in the northern territory and to wreak the kind of havoc that they've had now over these last 17 months. But with that, we do have an update, and there has been a lot of push, and many of you that are listening to this program know that we have had Senator Portman, other members of the U.S. Senate and Congress advocating on behalf of Iraqi Christians, the Christian minority, Yazidis, even Sunni Muslims who were being persecuted by ISIS as they came into Iraq, and of course, the Kurds were holding the line with the Peshmerga forces. And 3 million Kurds hosting 1.5 million, upwards of 1.5 million refugees. It will be 2 years this coming August. President Barzani of the Kurdish territory did come to Washington last spring, almost a year ago now, met with members of the Obama administration and sought humanitarian aid. And he did receive an aid package from that visit. I did have a chance to meet the man, shake his hand, at least thank him for giving hospitality to those refugees that had sought protection in his territory. But there's a lot of nuances to the old prejudices and rivalries that have taken place in the Middle East. And here to talk about it in detail is Joseph Kassab. Joe, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for what you do, sir. And again, our prayers and our thoughts are always on a regular basis for the Iraqi Christian people that are still held up in refugee camps with no direction forward or out of Iraq. And I know, of course, there was a push to try to get the expedition of visa processes going through processing centers. Tell us, what is the update there? Because when this first all happened, I know that Senator Portman and other senators writing letters to the administration, the State Department, urging that they open up a visa processing center in Erbil. That would be in northern Iraq. Now, they would say, well, we have one in our embassy in Baghdad. Well, that would mean that these people would have had to have traveled nearly 200 miles through ISIS-controlled territory. The very people that had actually persecuted their family members and relatives and beheaded children and men and women and brutally treated them when they came into the territory. All of that was nonsense. And so very frustrating, in fact, and very cruel, in my opinion, from the Obama administration to even suggest such a thing. But there's been some updates. There was a push. There was a joint letter signed by members of the U.S. Senate that submitted to the State Department and to the Obama administration. What is the update of visa processing there in Erbil for some of these folks?
Well, before I go there, thank you, Chris, for this really introduction. And as you see, and as you already mentioned, the situation for the internally displaced people from the Christians, Yazidis, and other minorities in the area is becoming really very chaotic and grim. And a lot of people are losing hope of what to do next. We're getting a lot of messages, very, very straight messages. I get calls a lot from on the ground in Iraq about this, and everybody is complaining about the living conditions, the children, the way they live, no schools, no enough, you know, ration or food for them, no protection. And they are very, very worried about that. And they don't know where to go. But going back to the issue of safe passage and using the issue of family unification here, we call it P2 criteria. Our people are really going through a lot of issues with that. We have been talking to the State Department on this issue. We are really, first of all, I want to say we are very grateful to our members of the Congress and of the Senate, and especially Senator Portman, for helping in this cause. It's a very humanitarian cause, and we really appreciate all the support he's giving to our people among his colleagues. And I want to say that this processing issue that you just talked about, the processing of the internally displaced people, the refugees, in order for them to come and reunite with their family members, is becoming really very painful, very slow. And we're getting promises from the State Department, especially the PRM. PRM is the Population and Refugee Migration Bureau, which deals with these issues under a program called USRAP, United States Refugee Admission Program. And that is a program we worked on in the past, about 6-7 years ago, more than that. And the State Department then helped us out, bringing a lot of people here. Majority of them are very peaceful people that are contributing to the economy and to the society a lot, never been terrorists or anything. They are run away from terrorism. And these people, again, we have more people that they want to come that way. They want to reunite with their family members. But the doors are not fully open for them. The number of people who are coming from that area is really very, very anemic, and they're trickling in numbers. And we are very, very dissatisfied with that. And that's why we are talking to our friends in the Congress, in the Senate, to help us out more and help us out also opening the door for these people. We understand that there is a security issue. We understand that there is a vetting issue and what have you. And we ourselves helped out a lot with that. And we stand ready now to, again, help them out with that, too. I meant helping the agencies that they do the vetting. And we have the expertise for that. For instance, I myself, back in December 2015, I gave a training session to more than 100 DHS officers to let them know what kind of population they are dealing with, who this population is, how they become internally displaced, and how we can then help them identify them or being good people, people that they don't cause harm, people who are peace-loving, and they should, you know, help them out. So this is the kind of things we are doing for our community in the diaspora, but definitely we need a lot more help from the Congress, from the State Department, to sort of, you know, accelerate this particular program and making more accessible to our people back there.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And again, we're talking with Joseph Kassab of the Iraqi Christian Advocacy Organization of Greater Detroit, but his influence is quite honestly in Washington, D.C. and internationally as well. And he is tapped time and again by officials to give them some intel and experience of the people's groups that we're dealing with in the Middle East. And of course, our main interest is to protect Iraqi Christians. These are our brothers and sisters in Christ, and they have faced severe persecution at the hands of ISIS, the Islamic State, and the Caliphate. They've been driven from their homes. They've lost their businesses, their livelihoods. They're in refugee camps. These are people that had good lives back in Mosul and lived like you and I, and they had businesses and they had homes, they had communities, and now all that's been taken away from them by the Islamic State. Now, the Kurds, and we'll get to this a little later in the program, though the Peshmerga forces were, you know, obviously combating ISIS, they were only interested in areas which ISIS had taken, which were Kurdish territory. So they wanted to get that back. They don't seem to have much of an interest to help to take the entire city of Mosul, which quite honestly would be quite a task. I mean, the city of Mosul is about the size of Columbus, Ohio, 600,000 residents originally.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things, and it's, I know it breaks your heart too, Joe, those that are remaining, and one lady, even a Sunni Muslim being persecuted under the caliphate of ISIS, the pleas, the despotism, the desperate situation in Mosul itself at this time, being controlled by ISIS, no medicine, no foods, you know, everything is broken down as far as everyday life. And this woman said she pleaded with the West, either come and help us, deliver us, or bomb us. I mean, that's, you're pretty desperate if you're literally asking foreign nations to bomb you. I mean, wow, things got to be pretty bad in Mosul.
Because the desperation is really at its max at this time among our people. But I want to say also that Mosul itself, not that many people are left there. They've already been evicted from their homes and been sent empty-handed, empty pockets, to the areas of Kurdistan and other places. Either you become Muslim or you convert or you leave or we'll kill you. And this is the kind of thing they are facing at this time, and that's why we see very little number of our people down there. But more importantly, I want to say is that our, you know, Christian icons are being destroyed. Now, for instance, and only in the last 2 days or so, we had one of the icon churches in Mosul. It's called the Clock Church, which was completely bombed. This was built about 150 years ago. And if you remember, 150 years ago, the clock was not that much available to everybody. So they had a big clock on a tower on the church itself, goes along with the domes of the church. And guess what? That clock was used by the Muslims more than the Christians. Why is that? Because the Muslims, they pray on certain time of the day, five times a day, and they have to look up the clock to make sure they can pray right on time. And guess whose clock were they using in order to pray? The church clock.
The church clock, yeah.
So that tells you how much we contributed to Islam, to the Muslim society, but at the same time, that's just a simple example of how much we contributed. But again and again and again, our people were betrayed by their neighbors, Muslims, and because they became Islamists, and Islamists are radicals, and they don't like anybody but themselves. If you don't become part of them, either you're killed or you leave. And if you leave, you leave empty-handed. You leave all your home, your clothing, your money, your belongings, your businesses all behind. And that's exactly how it is happening now and how it did happen when ISIS entered Mosul. Now, we are concerned about another area that I myself, unfortunately, and I had an ominous prediction the day that ISIS entered Mosul, that I thought I was predicting that they might also go to Nineveh Plain. Nineveh Plain is to the southeast of Mosul. Nineveh Plain is the size of country like Lebanon, and it is full of Christian villages, more than 200 of them. And a lot of people live there, over 800,000 people in different villages. Very prosperous people live there. They were all, you know, self-dependent, and they were working together in order to make sure that they can live in peace and prosperity. Unfortunately, ISIS, after 3 months from their entering to Mosul, they entered Nineveh Plain, and also they emptied it. The Iraqi government failed to protect that area. So, in other words, the whole army and everybody ran away. The Peshmerga, they tried their best to protect the area, but they couldn't do that because of the equipment and the power that they didn't have enough to fight ISIS. So that area was all taken by ISIS, and now it is run by ISIS. I want to tell you also, and for your listeners, at this time, believe it or not, there are more than 3 million people living under the ISIS caliphate state. And imagine those 3 million people, they were very modern people, very modern people and civilized people, and also moderate people. Now they are living under ISIS, so imagine their life is just going backwards. And, you know, they, as you said earlier, there's not enough, you know, supplies, no good living conditions, and they are living under the sword. This is the kind of thing that our people are going through and they're suffering from, and we really need the help here for sure.
We're talking with Joseph Zob of the Iraqi Christian Advocacy Organization. We're talking about the plight of the Iraqi Christians still in northern Iraq. They are in the Kurdish territory, but they're in refugee camps. They have no way forward. They have no way back to their homeland, as ISIS still controls the Nineveh Plain. No foreign armies have come to deliver these people or to take back the territory. And there's been a bungling of sorts from the Western and Arab nations as to who is to move first, who is to do what. And when the United States does not lead, folks, this is what happens. When a contingency force was not left in Iraq, it left it freely open for this terrorist army to come in and invade in an overflow of the Syrian civil war. And with this, many lost their lives. Many at the hands of ISIS, by the sword of ISIS, by the caliphate, convert to Islam or face death. And that's what the caliphate was. And those who professed Jesus Christ, who did not, were not able to escape, faced the sword, and they were martyred. We're talking with Joseph Kassab of the Iraqi Christian Advocacy Organization, and we're going to talk about this more during this program. But I want you to understand, ladies and gentlemen, we need to be praying for these people. These are brothers and sisters in Christ. It is our problem. You know, when the Lord said, that we are to care for our neighbor. We are to care for our brothers and sister in Christ. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. You know, we need to be advocating for these people. We need to be telling our congressmen and our senators to not forget this situation, that the cry of these people and these children who are in these camps. And in fact, things aren't going well in the camps at times. Joe, I heard reports that even... there are Muslims that are there, and there are Christians that are there, and my wife also has read these reports where Christians, even in the camps, are being persecuted by other Muslims.
Well, that is true. As I said, you heard me earlier saying, anybody don't go by their ideology. They are brutal and very, very Islamic ideology. Therefore, he is not with them, and there is against them. And definitely, there are some Muslims, mainly the Shia, from Iraq, who makes the majority in Iraq, also became their victims. That is very much true. But more importantly, their victims are the Yazidis and the Christians, which led to a state of genocide in Iraq. And that we are grateful to the U.S. Congress and the Senate on this for sure, that they passed a resolution based on that. And so is the U.S. administration, where John Kerry, Secretary of State, did admit that there was a genocide taking place in Iraq, and the victims of the genocide at this time are the Christians, the Yazidis, and some other small minorities, and even, he said, some of the Muslim Shias. The problem with this at this time is this thing has been declared for the last four or five weeks so far, but has not been activated. It's been the secretary himself and the U.S. administration has been very, very silent about this. And we want to talk to our members, our friends and members of the Congress and the Senate, why the U.S. administration is so silent about the passing of, already they passed the genocide, but you need to activate it. You need to realize the results of it and the benefit of this particular, resolution. Why the U.S. administration is not activating it, we don't know. Because one of the major benefits of this particular genocide resolution is the fact that the Christians and the Yazidis who were hurt because of the atrocities of the ISIS, they should be compensated for their lives, some of them who died. They should be compensated for what they lost as far as belongings and homes. And also, more importantly, they should be recognized as people of refuge, and therefore they should be admitted as refugees in this country. This is not happening. This, and we don't know why. There is too much of a silence. And to be honest with you, I am one of the people who pushed for that. I'm very much bothered by the fact that has not been activated, has not been, you know, we have not realized any benefits from it yet, and therefore we feel it's worthless if it is not activated.
Well, so, Joe, that's right. Yeah. And as we're talking, and in fact, I'm reading the Newswire here, and Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden,
He's there.
I want to share with the news here from the folks. This, according to the Associated Press, Baghdad, Iraq, Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, conducts a surprise visit to Baghdad. So he is over there to discuss with them, you know, the defeat of ISIS. What can we anticipate from this visit, Joe?
Well, hopefully we will see something good. We'll realize something good that if the vice president is there, and I know he has a good intention, that he can do something. He can motivate the Iraqi government to combat ISIS and help the provide help to the Iraqi government and the Peshmerga to fight ISIS. The problem is we don't know whom to trust in the Iraqi government in order to defeat ISIS, and whether this is going to be their only purpose or will be a lot more than that. This is something we are not sure of, but we are sure of something, that the Peshmerga want to wipe out ISIS because it will become a threat to them if they don't do so, because they are only a few kilometers away from Kurdistan. And definitely we need to see that happen. We want the ISIS to be removed by the Peshmerga, and if that Peshmerga, in order to do it, they need a lot of support from the U.S. government. We have asked. I was at the White House and the guy at the time ISIS invaded Iraq, especially Mosul, and I asked the White House, I asked the National Security Council to provide weapon and equipment and intel to the Peshmerga and to the Kurdish government in order to fight back ISIS. Why is that? It's not only to protect Kurdistan, but also to protect people of Kurdistan, of which now we have over a million IDPs there. So that is something very important. The situation is still volatile. It is fragile. And we don't know what the outcome would be. But we definitely would like to see some boots on the ground, some American boots on the ground. We definitely would want to see a lot more sorties in the skies in order to fight back ISIS. And also we want them to be cut off from their IT information, their transportation, their money, making businesses. And this is something we should continue doing, to be honest with you.
Well,
this is important, and we have to do something about it.
Well, that's right. And our hearts and our thoughts and our prayers are with the Iraqi Christian people. We're going to see this through to the end, Joe. We started when this first broke, and of course, Chaldean Christians who have made their way to the United States and become U.S. citizens here in Columbus, Ohio, and of course, the great community that you have up there in Greater Detroit. Wonderful people who are a great asset to our country, a great addition to our country. And some will want to come to the United States, to other Western nations, and some might want to return to their own homes. So we would like to see ISIS driven out, these people being able to go back to their own homes if possible.
100%. And I just want to add that our community, our immigrant community here in the United States, it is no new to this country. It is over one century old community, and not only that, very thriving, very successful community, business entrepreneurs who are really contributing a lot to the American society and building themselves and building their societies in order to excel here. So So this is really important for everybody to know. More importantly is that the Iraqi Christian diaspora community are very, very peace-loving people, people who want to build the bridges among communities, people who want to see a prosper America, and they are working for that advancement themselves. And not only that, we have been contributing a lot through our professionals, and the community has become very, very professional here. We have professionals in every aspect of life and businesses, doctors, lawyers, business entrepreneurs. We even have associations for them. And, you know, this is really big. It's a big community. If you count this community throughout the United States, I would say the population is around 600 to 700,000 people who continue to work hard for their families and for their country, the United States of America.
Absolutely. Thank you, my friend. God bless you. We'll have you back on in the near future.
Thank you again. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you. God bless you. Joseph Kasaba, the Iraqi Christian Advocacy Organization. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back on the other side with Nathan Colasso, who's going to give us an update from a different perspective. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This program is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. Healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. Healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Religious liberty is under assault. Pastors and churches are being sued. Bibles are being removed from military installations, and religious symbols are being stripped from the public square. The Ohio Christian Alliance defends religious liberties and our First Amendment rights. This year's Freedom Banquet speaker is Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who has protected religious liberty in his state.
Religious liberty is at the heart of who we are as an American people. This right is the right that the founders came over in search of when they started this country. It is a right that is protected today.
Speakers include State Treasurer Josh Mandel, State Auditor Dave Yost, and other special guests. Help defend religious liberty and register for this year's Ohio Christian Alliance Spring Freedom Banquet with Governor Sam Brownback, one of America's most conservative governors, on Thursday, May 19th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. To register, log on to ohioca.org or phone 330-887-1922. That's 330-887-1922. And we're back. And with us on the phone is Nathan Colasso, and we're going to talk about and continue our discussion on the Iraqi Christians who are there in Iraq. And then, of course, some are making their way here to the United States. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me again, Chris. I happened to catch the last couple minutes of Joe Kasab. He's a good man. He's spent a lot of his life working for our cause, and I'm happy that you had him on the show today.
Well, that's right, and we were just looking on the news wire here. It looks as if Vice President Joe Biden has made a surprise visit to Baghdad, and he is meeting with the U.S. ambassador there, and they're talking about the continued fight against ISIS. Now, we've seen some progress in recent months, of course, with the Kurds have taken back some towns and villages, and then I think Fallujah was taken back in the south?
Yeah, for the Ramadi area, yeah.
The Ramadi area. So that was a gain, and of course ISIS has been hit with airstrikes, and there's been some. In fact, they were taking out one of their headquarters, I think, with a cruise missile or something. And the president has pledged 200 military personnel, U.S. military personnel, with Apache helicopters. Now, I don't exactly know the extent of this deployment. but and how it will work. But we'll get the details of that, I'm sure, in the coming weeks. But give us an update from the standpoint of the work that you do in Greater Detroit. You have a school. You receive immigrants that come into this country by refugee status or by visa that have been displaced persons or refugees. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Sure. Okay. I manage a charter school operations company. So we have a few schools across Metro Detroit, just outside of Detroit. And about half of our students are newcomers. So pretty much kids who have been displaced, whether it be over a short period of time or a long period of time in Iraq or outside of Iraq, who are new to the country. And we help acclimate them, and there's a comfortability factor there. The majority of our staff is bilingual. So we have firsthand experience with not just what's going on in the homeland, but what happens after these refugees resettle into Western countries, and in particular, the United States.
Well, and that's exciting, actually, because this is what the framework and the support structure that these folks are going to need as they get acclimated. And, of course, in the greater Detroit area, there's a large Iraqi Christian population. And so it's not as if they're just being dropped in the middle of nowhere. There are resources. There are community resources that they can access, and your group through the school, through the charter school system, is to help students. And you are faced with a student that basically has been somewhat challenged, meaning if they've been displaced, they may have missed some school time, being a refugee, being in the camps, or being a displaced person, depending upon their situation. Sometimes
right.
These kids have lost 2 or 3 years of school somewhere in there. Is that right?
Yeah. So that's exactly it. And the mission does not end just by resettling these people, just by resettling these minorities who have been uprooted and who have been persecuted. The mission continues. How do you acclimate them? How do you get them at proficient levels in reading and math and science and all their subjects? How do you make sure that the parents are growing in terms of the acclimation process along with their children? How do you make sure that there is no resentment that builds in the household because the kids are learning at a faster rate than the parents? Challenges need to be met with parents when it comes to work and when it comes to them gaining citizenship or earning citizenship. So the mission is not just how do we get our people out or how do we stabilize the area there, but it's when they do receive safe passage, we need to make sure that we don't lose them, because we're starting to see, and this is not just in our community, but it's with a number of other communities that have been products of war-torn nations, there's moral decay there. And so we do our best to make sure that we provide as many services and resources as possible to make it as easy as possible for the families to adjust.
You had a family you just recently received. They came from Iraq. How did they?
Yeah,
go ahead and tell us about them.
Yeah, we just received a family from Iraq. They came from the Qadaqosh area, which is very close to Mosul. And as we all know, Mosul is the second largest city in Iraq. It's the city that was besieged by ISIS back in summer of 2014. So this is a family that had death right at their doorsteps. They were given an alarm by some neighbors. They noticed that the villagers were packing up their belongings and getting ready to head out. And so the family did the same thing. A family of eight, mom and dad and six children. They left their home. They left everything behind and they just started driving. And they didn't stop until they reached Jordan. And the father did, and he spent whatever money he could to make sure that he got into Jordan. And he's waited a little less than 2 years to get his papers processed. And they just resettled now in an area in Michigan, a city called Troy. And we had them here on Monday, and it was one of the hardest conversations I've ever had to deal with. I had a father here with his six children and his wife, who said his own country kicked him out. He said, "My country kicked me out," and he just started crying. And so these types of experiences, these types of conversations, I could have with you for days. The reality is that this is happening, and we have a duty and an obligation to make sure that we fix fix our community, our Christian community, into something that we can be proud of.
Well, this gentleman who left, he saw the villagers packing up. He packed up his family of he and his wife and six children. They headed to Jordan. Now, you said what money he could use. How did that work? I mean, when he gets to the Jordanian border or he gets to a town in Jordan, what was the process there? Did he had to pay to stay, or how did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I did not ask him in specific, but you get the sense that he paid some of the border agents there just to gain entry into the country. And then he ended up working there. He worked as a cook. His wife worked. His two eldest children worked. His children did not go to school at the time. It was just too much. It was too hard for the family to do. And they had other members of the Iraqi Christian community in Jordan that were telling them not to send their kids to school because they would face persecution. So they kept the kids at home. And now the kids will be attending our programs here in Metro Detroit. A beautiful family, and we couldn't be happier to have them.
Well, that's right, and that's a blessing. And we've been praying for these folks. And now they went to Jordan, but others who could not get out of the country and head out that way. Some had tried to head out with their cars and were stopped by ISIS, forced to exit their vehicles. Stripped of any possessions that they had, just left with the clothes on their back. That's another family that faced that reality. Tell us about them.
Absolutely. There is, and I wish I could say it was only one. Unfortunately, it's multiple, too many to count. Families that thought that they had received safe passage out of what was their former home or their former village, only to be stopped by ISIS, or only to be stopped by other insurgent forces, telling them they either have to go back, or that they have to pay a jizya, which is a form of extortion tax, or that they have to convert, or all these other ridiculous contingencies that they put on the minority community there. We've had a family who spent about a year in Erbil, and then went to Syria, the northeastern part of Syria, which was a stable area, only to be met with some radicalized groups taking over that area, having to go back to Iraq, then up to Turkey, and then finally reaching the United States just about 4 months ago. These stories are, you know, as many times as we hear them, we still get surprised, because we can't believe what these families have had to go through just to live a stable life, just to get to some area of stability. And even if you want to call resettling in a completely foreign country as being stable, that is to them is something that is fortunate. These are the types of families and the types of people that we have been working with over the past few years.
We're talking with Nathan Colasso, who runs a school in Greater Detroit for specialized children who have come from other countries, primarily from the Middle East. There were Christians, Chaldean Christians. There's a great Chaldean Christian community in Greater Detroit. And we wanted to see many more families being able to come. We have lobbied the Obama administration at the beginning of this crisis, when ISIS announced the caliphate. It was a genocide. The world and the international community saw it for what it was. It was a genocide from the beginning. This just recently, and reluctantly, I might add, the Obama administration finally acknowledged, with pressure being applied, that genocide was being officially conducted against Christians in the Middle East. Tell us about that development, Nathan.
Sure, and this is a collective effort by a number of organizations, a number of advocacy groups. The IDC played a huge role. Our international advocacy group, ADFA, a Demand for Action, played a crucial role. Joe Kassab and a number of other activists here in the Metro Detroit, Chicago, Modesto, San Diego. A lot of people came together, produced facts and produced statistics and broad-based coverages and images to prove our case that this is a genocide. It's a genocide against Christians. It's a genocide against Yazidis. It's a genocide against minorities in Iraq and Syria. And once the administration decided to acknowledge that, it was a sigh of relief. We knew that they understood at this point how serious the issue was. Now it becomes, what do you do next? Because technically, they're not bound to do anything after this genocide label or this genocide recognition. However, one would think that placing this label on a group that's enforcing their will and enforcing their laws and enforcing their disgusting nature on a peaceful people, one would think that there will be some more force and some more aid and potentially safe zones and potentially more safe passage into Western countries and the United States. One would think, just pragmatically speaking, this is the only way to accommodate a group of people who have been uprooted from their homes, primarily because we fought a war and withdrew from a war prematurely. And so this is where we're at now. We are advocating this, not only in Washington, but the UN held a summit today where they had a number of speakers. One of our priests from Iraq was there. Our executive director from Demand for Action was there. Yazidi sex slave testified on what she had to go through. So we're trying to get this now, not only with Washington, but with the UN. Let's set up some safe zones. Let's set up some safe passage. Let's get some peacekeepers there, some international troops. Let's make sure that these people are not only going to be able to move back home, but will be able to move into countries where they know that they're safe, and to not have to face these persecutions. Because, as I mentioned to you the other day, Chris, they're facing persecution not just in Iraq and not just in these Middle Eastern countries, but in some of the asylum shelters or the refugee camps in some of the European countries. So it doesn't end. The persecution has not ended with our people.
No, it hasn't, and that's why we're taking time on the program today. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. With me on the phone is Nathan Colasso, who runs a special school in Greater Detroit for children who have come out of these regions that have been in war zones and also persecution of Christians and have made their way to the United States. Of course, we've been advocating that the Obama administration would let more refugees, Christian refugees in from Iraq who have faced this genocide, this caliphate at the hands of ISIS, with no army on the ground to combat them of any size. I mean, the Iraqis themselves have bungled it in the south. They seem to have gotten a better handle on things, at least in the south, but they're not ready to take back Mosul. The Kurdish forces, the Peshmerga army, as they're notated, they have basically fought for their own territory to retake towns and villages of their interest, but no one seems to be in the mood to take on Mosul itself, which has now become a stronghold. Now, there has been some recent bombings, I understand, in Mosul. I think there was a cash or bank of ISIS, and it would seem to be ID'd, and that was in the news in the last week or so, trying to hit them where it hurts as far as financially. I know that some of the targeted airstrikes or drone strikes have been about some of their leadership, but still, very much they control the territory, and with that, there are many people that are oppressed. The reports coming out of Mosul, and we shared and talked about this with Joseph Kassab earlier in the program, is that things are so desperate in Mosul. There was a Muslim woman who said, pleading that the West would either come and deliver them from the Islamic State or bomb them, because there's no medicine, there's no food. It's such a desperate situation in Mosul itself under the caliphate, and there's not even the basics of services there. A very desperate situation, is it not, Nathan?
Absolutely. And there's only, you know, it was only a matter of time before the Islamic State or Daesh or ISIS or whatever you want to call them, it was only a matter of time before they were going to start experiencing their own type of internal disputes and their own type of internal strife. Because their oil trade and their supply routes, it was eventually going to be taken by our forces or the forces working with us, whether it be the Iraqi security forces, the Kurdish Peshmerga. And so that's what we're seeing now. They've dried up their supply routes. They've halted their trade routes. There was an article that I read earlier this morning that to make up for the loss in oil sales, they're starting to sell fish, for God's sakes. I mean, so this is we're starting to see that economically, it's not sustainable. However, when we discuss taking back Mosul, we're talking about a bloodbath. We're talking about the second largest city in Iraq. We're talking about ISIS infiltrating neutral, but innocent civilians.
Yeah.
Infiltrating that, and you know, once you have a war zone in a big city like that, then you can expect a lot of people to start fleeing. And who's to say who's a bad guy and who's a good guy?
Well, that's exactly right. And of course, it would be street to street fighting once again in Mosul. And that's a situation that's going to be debated. We're talking to Nathan Colasso. Hang on, Nathan. We'll be right back with some final thoughts. We'll be right back.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
This program is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
On May 19th is the Ohio Christian Alliance Spring Freedom Banquet, and our keynote speaker will be Governor Sam Brownback from Kansas, a strong conservative, a wonderful Christian man. In fact, he signed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 2013 and the Pastors Protection Act last June after the SCOTUS decision on homosexual marriage, protecting his state's pastors and churches and religious organizations. He'll be our keynote speaker for the evening. Also joining us will be State Treasurer Josh Mandel, well, State Auditor Dave Yost and other special guests. You can register at our website at ohioca.org, or you can phone 330-887-1922 for more information. And with us on the phone again is Nathan Kalasha with some closing thoughts as we give our thoughts and prayers and attention to the plight of the Iraqi Christians in Kurdish territory and have been driven from their homes. Nathan, what can we do at this point?
You know, Chris, you and your organization have done so much. It's just a matter of continuing this advocacy and this awareness. If your listeners and the people part of the Ohio Christian Alliance, if they just spend time discussing this issue with their friends, maybe people who are not aware of just how dire the situation is for the world's oldest Christian communities, just do so. And then try to visit websites where you know that money will go towards saving a life or providing a meal or putting a roof over someone's head. HelpIraq.org is a good one. A Demand for Action is a good one. Joe Kassab's Iraqi advocacy group, Iraqi Christian advocacy group, is a good one. Just spend time with friends and family and make sure you don't forget about it.
Absolutely, and that's what we're going to do. And we're going to petition Congress and keep it in front of the U.S. Senate as well. Nathan, thanks so much for coming on the program today. God bless you, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. God bless you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Amen. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. And again, you can learn more about our organization at our website at ohioca.org. And again, if you'd like to register for the Ohio Christian Alliance Spring Freedom Banquet on May 19th, you can do so at our website or phone 330-887-1922. God bless. Have a good evening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.